Welcome to Social Geek Radio, brought to you by Social Joey and Deb Evans Consulting. Here is your host, Jack Munson.
This ain't no party, this ain't no disco, this is Social Geek Radio. Hello, geeks. We're about to dive deep into the geekery this week with our special guest. It's David Chapman, founder of 919 Marketing. Hey, David, how are you?
Doing great.
Give us a little background on yourself, 919. I've known you now for a few years through the International Franchise Association. But for some of the folks that may not be as familiar, tell us about yourself and 919.
Sure. Well, my background is that I grew up sort of as a traveling child. My dad worked for AT&T, and I lived in some really sort of interesting places like Guam in Canada, Newfoundland, Canada, Bahamas, Kwajalein. And sort of as a side note to that, I mean, I certainly watched my share of TV back in the days as a kid, and I think I always had a passion for marketing. I mean, I think it probably started watching this childhood show that I had called called Bewitched, which was about an ad agency husband who was married to my first crush, Elizabeth Montgomery. So I think that's where my marketing sort of started. I've always been sort of a homer for marketing. I mean, in college, I made up a position at a ski resort called Director of Student Marketing, where I could use that to have keg parties and do things like that. So I've always been sort of a marketing guy. My background as far as from a professional perspective is that I've been on all sides. I've been on the agency side. I was an account strategist for the world's largest global ad agency. I was on the publishing side. I've been on the client side as an EVP marketing. So I come from a pretty well-rounded background from that perspective. And then I started 919 Marketing. And I really thought at the time I was kind of burnt out from working for the agency, and I thought I was going to move to Raleigh and sort of be this consultant, live on a golf course, play golf. And that didn't last very long because I ended up calling on clients that I'd worked on at the global agency. And before I knew it, I had, had employees and sort of got to where I am today. We got into franchising actually about a little over a decade ago, oddly enough, through coaching baseball, if you can believe that. I was coaching a baseball team. Kids baseball team, as usual, no one would sponsor the team. So the coach is the one who starts sponsoring the team. So
right.
Sure enough, 919 Marketing is on the back of the shirts. And a dad came up to me one day and said, "Hey, what is 919 Marketing?" And then told him, and he said, "Let's go to lunch and talk." And we talked, and this guy is a pretty well-known guy in franchising, a guy by the name of Doug Shadle with Rhino 7. And he told me about franchising. He got me involved with one of his clients, and there you have it. That's where we are a decade later. We're certainly one of the largest and probably one of the only true franchise content marketing agencies in the biz right now. And there you have it.
And now you're the Larry Tate of franchising.
Oh, wow. Very impressive. Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm impressed. I see you were watching the same show I was.
I watched a little TV back in the day too, as it just happens. So 919 has been around for how many years now?
22
years. So 22 years ago, we had no Facebook. We didn't even have the Facebook. We had really no blogs. There were not really websites. Let's see, 22 years ago. What were you doing 22 years ago as a marketing agency? Was it PR? Was it television? What was sort of the spark when you first started?
Well, funny story is that when I bought my first computer to start the company, it was a Mac, and it was a $6,000 laptop computer that was the bomb.
Wow.
It was absolutely amazing.
$6,000
for a
not a MacBook.
Right. And it was a smoking at the time. It was a smoking computer. I mean, actually, as a matter of fact, a funny story. I've collected cell phones since I started the business, and I have them on a rack here in my office.
Uh-huh.
And it's amazing to look at those because it's like people say, like, is that a computer? Or is that like a calculator? It's like, no, it's a phone actually.
It's a brick.
So you can sort of see how things went along from back then to now. But what we were at the time, I was working with mainly with Nabisco and Unilever, And we were doing a lot of marketing related things, not necessarily just advertising, a lot of promotional work. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you the funny thing is that no matter whether it was 20 years ago, 40 years ago, 20 years ahead, the real thing about marketing is the ideas behind it. You know, you can do a lot of things and spend a lot of money, but if there's not a solid idea behind what you're doing, it really doesn't matter. And, you know, that has really survived from the sandwich board days, you know, when people were, you know, walking around with sandwich boards to those little Burma shave signs and, you know, many, many years ago to today. I mean, it's really still the power of the idea.
Yeah, I guess everything else is really just a means to an end. It's a way to deliver the message, whether it's on television or Instagram now or something else. But yeah, the message is really the critical thing there. Let's talk a little bit more about franchising. You're doing a lot of work with a lot of great franchise brands. Talk to me about the challenges that a brand has now in 2018 that you're seeing on both a brand level and maybe also down on the franchisee level as well.
Sure. Yeah. You know, from a brand level, you know, I see a lot of brands that are poorly positioned. You know, brands that don't really have a clear point of difference. They might have one, but it's not communicated through their branding. And that to me is holding them back from really maximizing their capabilities and their ability to grow the brand. I see too much Me Too copycat mm-hmm. approaches. You know, it seems to be a real copycat industry where, you know, I really don't have a good idea what to say, so I'm just going to copy my competitor, which by nature of that means all the marketing is probably pretty average. You know, when everyone's doing the same thing, you really can't break out that way. And the last thing I'd say about it from a brand level is there's not enough strategic planning up front. It seems like there's the art of strategy is sort of gone by the wayside. Everybody wants speed, you know. Mm-hmm. They want it really fast, but they don't want to spend the time to sort of take a step back and figure out what's our vision, what's our plan, how we're going to measure it, how much is it going to cost, who's going to do what, all those things. I don't see enough of that from brands these days.
Yeah, get me a viral video right now, right?
right. Yeah, you don't have enough time to really think about it. Just do it, and it better work.
Yeah,
you know, that kind of approach I think is a problem. Frandev wise, I think they're unrealistic expectations. You know, the latest show, I'm sure you saw the numbers I did in terms of how many franchises are actually sold as an industry. And then I hear people that I talk to and they're throwing out absurd numbers of how many franchises they want to sell in a year. And it just doesn't add up. You know, somebody is sort of like the chair game. You know, there's three chairs and there's two people.
Yeah.
The music stops. Somebody's not getting a chair. So I see that from a Frandev perspective. You probably see the same thing I do in terms of budgets that aren't really based on sales goals. You know, they have these sales goals, but they don't really backfill the sales goals with a marketing plan that supports the sales. It's sort of a, you know, let's throw a number out there and that's the budget. You know, it's not really based on, you know, a sales, you know, to me, sales and marketing should be connected at the hip.
Yeah.
And marketing should help drive sales. I don't see enough of that there. And then I think you said locally, I think there are more sophisticated franchisees coming on board, particularly for brands that are not, you know, early stage brands. I mean, when you're a brand that's, you know, sort of gone past the dating the first girl, you know, syndrome where you get people in who are early adopters, but they may not be the best franchisees for you in the long term. I see as brands sort of get more, you know, larger, they get more sophisticated franchisees, and those franchisees have higher expectations and, yeah, you know, that's a big one, I think. And also, I don't see enough brands really turning their franchisees into brand ambassadors, you know, where they really help them become more visible in their local community. I think that's something that I think that the industry as a whole could probably do a better job of. And obviously, you know it, I know it, everybody's looking for the silver bullet. But the only silver bullet I've ever seen is the Coors silver bullet.
Coming your way.
Coming your way.
So with that said, what do you see happening right now as far as trends that brands, franchisors, and their local guys need to be watching right now? What's coming their way that they need to avoid or maybe jump on that train this year?
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, you know, AI, artificial intelligence is becoming more and more in play,
mm-hmm.
And it's driving more marketing programs. I mean, Derek at Blue Water, you probably know, I mean, I sat in on a webinar he did the other day, and I found out he's got some really interesting, cool stuff going on from an AI perspective in terms of making, you know, marketing decisions. I think that stuff is super cool coming down. I mean, it's not like it's far, far away. It's here right now. Mm-hmm. It's obviously going to take a lot of sort of different shapes and turns, but it certainly is here, and I think that's a huge trend. I guess more from my perspective, you know, because we're a content marketing agency, so we're looking all the time from a, you know, what they call the peso model, you know, paid advertising, paid media, you know, digital, traditional, earned, which is, you know, PR, you know, you earn the media versus paying for it, social media, and then own media, you know, talking about your social channels, talking about your websites, direct mail, all those sort of things. I mean, I really sort of see that pay to play at the major networks is really something that's fascinating to me. You know, back in the day, you know, 22 years ago, you would never see on Good Morning America an overtly placed segment that's paid for. They don't say it's paid for, but you know, you've got products on there that paid to get on there, and they're part of the news network, the actual show now.
Yeah.
So pay to play is
news
really
department. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And I would have never thought that, you know, I mean, 10 years ago, I'd never thought that would happen. Five years ago, I thought that would never happen. It's happening, and it's happening all the time. I mean, it's happening in every media outlets out there. You know, there used to be this separation of church and state. It's not really there anymore. And I think that's something that is certainly a trend going on. I'm not sure if I like it or I don't like it. What I don't like about it is that most franchise brands are not going to pay what I know people are paying to be on Good Morning America and have a 2.5 minute segment. You know, it used to be where folks like us and others, you know, in the industry could get you there. We still can, but it's just more difficult, you know, that way. I think the Trump factor is also another trend that's going on. And what I mean by that is that, you know, like him or hate him, he sucks up the news current.
Yeah.
You know, every day.
Yeah.
It's all Trump. It's all good. It's all bad, whatever it may be. There's just a lot less area there for franchise brands to be a part of the news current, which makes it, you know, very difficult on a national stage.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what else. The other thing I'd say is this is really what fascinates me, and that is companies that are creating their own lead channels. They're creating their own channels, period. I mean, you look at Amazon and, you know, what they're doing, and they're buying up, you know, obviously not just, you know, retailers, they're buying up content. I mean, they are you know, they're selling you products, but you know, Amazon Prime does a really good job. But Amazon content, movies, movie channels, all those things. Apple's getting into it. I mean, the most impressive one I know about is Red Bull. You know, I don't know if you've seen what Red Bull is doing. I mean, everybody knows about the energy drink, but you know, they've got a magazine called the Red Bulletin that has a higher circulation than Rolling Stone and a bunch of other magazines. That is really super cool that they created their own lead channel. So they're talking directly to their own customers through their own magazine, not using other media outlets. And they're into music. They have their music. They actually sell content to media outlets, which think about that for a minute.
Yeah,
you know, a brand selling content to a media outlet, you know, so that kind of stuff I think is fascinating as well. And I recently spoke about that at the IFA show, and there's an article that I wrote in Franchising World. It's really pretty fascinating what's going on from a creating your own lead channel perspective.
We'll put a link to that article on the Social Geek Radio website and Facebook page if anybody wants to check that out. It was a very interesting article, David. I want to jump into the content intelligence platform that you've been working on. It's called 919 Insights. Tell us about it, and how did this whole thing get started?
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, just sort of piggybacking off what we just talked about, you know, driving prospects to your website and social channels and converting to leads is getting harder and more expensive and less effective by the day. You know, it's just, you know, I'm sure you hear it all the time, just like I do when I'm talking with a client or a prospect about how portals aren't driving leads for me like they used to.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you name it, whatever they're doing, it seems like there is, you know, more money being spent. They're becoming less effective. And so what do you do in the face of that? And that's a really sort of a big issue for us, you know, as we think about what kind of service we deliver to our clients. And, you know, from a content perspective, you know, we were like everybody else in the industry. I'll admit it. And I think we all should admit it, is that we were largely guessing at what content You know, when I say content, I mean content on your websites, your social media, even pay-per-click was really driving engagement. I mean, you can see what people are searching for, you know, but you can't really see what's actually working. You know?
Yeah. Well, until you could measure everything, you had to throw everything you had up on the wall and see what stuck and then do that again. Sure.
And it's a lot of black box kind of stuff where, trust us, this is really good. You know, we've got this black box. Yeah. I'm not going to tell you how it works, but it's really great.
This is really good stuff. Seriously. Yeah.
Right. And don't challenge me on it because I know it's right. That kind of thing. So I began this search, you know, a few years ago of technology solutions that, you know, we're not that black box we're talking about, but we're based on, you know, really pulling data from trusted resources, you know, like Google Analytics and other places where people trust that data. And so, you know, can I find someone who's not a black box, but somebody who's actually got something really exciting? And I ran across this company, and, you know, we've done it with, let's see. And we did it with ourselves, obviously. I can't talk to somebody about something that I haven't eaten my own dog food on. So, right. You know, we did it first. We found out some really interesting things about our website, about our social content, about everything. It was really eye-opening to me because I thought we were super smart. we weren't as smart as we thought we were. And so we became this exclusive franchise channel partner for this technology. It's, we're white labeling it, and then we use it, how we use it. I mean, we're not a technology company. Let me make that perfectly clear. But why we're so excited about it is that we can use it to make smarter decisions on behalf of our clients. I mean, for example, what we can get out of this, which really, you know, it sort of takes us from I think to I know, like we mentioned earlier, but it tells us what content's driving people to our clients' websites and social platforms. It tells us what content is being read and consumed and what content's not being read, you know, because you look at a website. I mean, I've seen some reports recently on some franchise brands we've run this on, and in a lot of cases, about 75% of the content is not even being read, you know, which is shocking. You know, you think about that and all the time and effort you put behind that content and nobody's even reading it.
Yeah, and money. All of the resources you spend for 75% of the content or you know, whether it's written or video or, you know, whatever it might be, if no one is paying any attention to it, that's a whole lot of waste right there.
You better believe it. And, you know, that's when you start making some big decisions. I mean, as I said, we did it on our own website, and it should come at no shock to you that we're redoing our website as a result of it.
Yeah. Well, it's a good story to tell. You know, look, we redid ours too, right? So.
Well, absolutely. You know, I mean, you got to practice what you preach for sure. So, I mean, here's the biggest part of it. Not the biggest, but one of them is that, you know, we can tell you what content is driving action, i.e. leads, engagement, you know, so. And what we found out is that most times what content brings you to a site is not the content that converts you into a lead. So, you think about that for a minute in terms of looking at Google search terms and figuring out what's being searched the most. That's not necessarily what's going to convert people on your website. Mm. So you need to know what content's really driving action in that regard, which is a big deal.
You got to bring them in, and then there's something that's happening on the site that's changing them over to some other content or something else that they find compelling to stick around. Is that sort of the case?
Correct. Yeah, well, I mean, it depends on what stage. It gets into, you know, what stage of the buying process you're in, and sort of what content's going to make you decide, okay, I'm ready to talk. You know, because, I mean, I don't know if you've seen the statistic, you probably have, but I mean, HubSpot, who people generally trust, the statistic is that 70% of the buying decision is made before they ever decide to contact you. So you think about that for a minute. So that means your website better be smoking good. Yeah, you know, it better keep people in the sales funnel, you know, from top of the funnel, middle of the funnel, down to bottom of the funnel. Because if you don't have that, you know, then, you know, you're sort of, you know, going to battle without the right tools.
Yeah.
And that really also speaks to the content side of things as well. But here's the other part of it, which is sort of the X factor on this, which I found, you know, and most people do find really, really exciting, is that it allows you to look at your competition and see what's working for them and what's not. So you can sort of figure out, okay, there's some things they're doing that we ought to be doing, things they're talking about we ought to be talking about, which allows you to be, you know, a lot better, you know, by virtue of the fact that now you get to look at the entire competitive set. Well, not the entire competitive set, but certainly your top competitors, and sort of see, Okay. So let's look at our four sites. What's working? What's not working? Where's the gold, the golden nugget that I can write about, that kind of stuff, which that's what got me super excited about this technology. And we've done it, I think I said earlier, we've done it for 12 brands right now, and you'd be shocked about what we found out. It's pretty interesting. Obviously I can't tell you about it,
yes.
But certainly it's interesting.
I love the idea of the competitive analysis there too, because maybe this is a franchise industry thing too, but it seems like there are so many CEOs that are more interested in what their competitors are doing than what their own company is doing. It's the competitive nature of some of the CEOs that we know that, they're way more into what competitive brands are doing right now. And we just got to beat those guys. I love that idea.
Right.
The other thing
beating
that I
them
saw,
means copying them, basically.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. The other thing that I saw in 919 Insights that I thought was really intriguing was this idea of your audiences experiencing a brand's website in different ways based on how they got there or, what channel they used to discover that brand. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah. Well, if you think about, maybe take a step back and think about, sort of the number, the kind of content and the magnitude of content people really need. So, if you think about, typically brands have or should have maybe 3 to 5 different buyer personas. They're based on a combination of, ethnicity, age, gender, marital status, career path. All those things that are there. You sort of roll those together, you're gonna come up with at least 3, maybe 5 different buyer personas. And then you think about maybe there's 5 steps of the buying process. That depends on the brand clearly, but say there's 5. So you think about the numbers on that. 5 different personas, 5 stages, right? And then you think about the content that you could create for each part of that buying stage. Videos, infographics, long form content, short form content, blogs, what else? Mm-hmm. Ebooks, webinars. The list is endless of things you could create. So you roll those numbers up and then you think about, holy crap, that's a lot of content that I need to create to be able to talk to these folks. And again, going back to that 70% of the buying decisions made before they ever talk to you. So yeah, it tells you need to create a lot of content, and it damn well better be good, because you're going to spend money on it.
Right.
So to me, that's a big deal.
Right. And then going back to what you said about, what percentage of the content that you're creating never even gets any attention whatsoever. So, sort of a juggling act, or I guess a better way to say it is a real-time response to, should we keep doing content like this or should we forget that because no one's paying attention to it anyway and focus on, what's bringing people in.
Right. Exactly. Which is, to me, that is sort of, having the power to do that is really pretty amazing, because it, and again, am I going to say that it's all perfect? No, because things change, it's all dynamic on the web. And people change and their viewing habits change. But the other thing about this, which I didn't even talk about, is the fact that this gives you sort of has a dashboard with real-time updates. So, we'll know, you'll be able to know by looking at the dashboard sort of what content that, how you move the needle from content that converts. You'll also be able to track your competitors and be able to sort of stay on top of it to where you're playing your chess game every day, every week, every month, however you want to play it, versus just doing it one and done and then hoping for the best.
Mm-hmm. David, in the few minutes we have left, outside of 919 Insights, which we're going to put a link on the socialgeekradio.com website so people can check that out a little further. What else are you working on these days? What's on the big drafting table?
Well, based on the fact that we're a content marketing agency and based on the fact that we know what content converts, let me throw a couple things out there.
Okay.
So we recently did a webinar. Well, actually not recently. We did it 2 years ago at the IFA, and we've turned it into a self-paced webinar that people can access on our website. It's the top 10 marketing tips for emerging franchise brands. We've gotten quite a bit of interest from brands that that look at that, I can tell from just in terms of what's from a data perspective. I mean, that's a pretty popular thing that people might want to check out. We also have an article that I wrote recently in Forbes that's getting a lot of play for obvious reasons, and the headline of it is why franchisees hate franchisors. getting a lot of readership on that, I can assure you, and it's really a funny article, but it's based on conversations, and it's based on really, at the end of the day, it's based on just a misunderstanding between the two. There's friction between the two. It's sort of like family. You know, you go to Thanksgiving dinner and there's always some friction at the table with relatives. It's sort of like that between the two parties there. And we're in the middle of it. Clearly you're probably in the middle of it too. You talk to franchisors and they both kind of unleash their frustration on you. So that article was really sort of the culmination of that. And then I guess the last thing is that article that we just talked about, which is this own versus rent your sales channel. How do you do that? An example is the Red Bull thing, which I talked about earlier, and some other things there was in Franchising World, the show issue. So we have all that stuff on our website. I would encourage people to go there and download it and take a look.
All right. We will link to that as well. And David Chapman of 919 Marketing, if anyone has further questions for you, they would like to connect with you, what's the best place for someone to reach out?
Well, I'll give you a couple ways. One is my email address, dchapman, C-H-A-P-M-A-N, at 919marketing.com. My direct phone line here at the office is 919-459-8156. And obviously our website is 919marketing.com, but certainly you can just come direct at me with those, either an email or a phone call. I'd love to talk, and we'll take it from there.
All right. Very good. David, thank you so much for joining Social Geek Radio tonight. And we will see you at a franchise event in the very near future, I'm sure.
Yes, you will. It's a pleasure. Thanks, Jack. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks and good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Social Geek Radio. Copyright 2018 Social Geek Radio.